Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
Hi, this is Tim Kirkjian, and this is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, August the 10th. By the way, on this date in 2016, Prince Fielder announced his retirement. He finished with exactly as many homers, 319, as his father. And birthday today is Chance Adams, Royals minor league pitcher. Someday he's going to face Chance Cisco. We can't wait for that. And producing from his home in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. Taylor, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Tim. How you doing?
Okay, I of course am filling in for Buster Olney. He is fishing at Lake George, his usual one-week vacation in the middle of the summer, which means he'll be doing something on his cell phone from boat, I'm sure, at 4 o'clock in the morning. We'll be talking today with ESPN MLB insider Jeff Passan and MLB.com Sarah Langs. And there are a lot of things to get to. Not many of them good, frankly. We start in Oakland. Benches cleared yesterday when the A's Ramon Laureano was hit by a pitch from the Astros' Humberto Castellanos with one out in the seventh inning. Laureano exchanged words with Astros hitting coach Alex Cintron. Then charge syndrome. Laureano was ejected. Suspensions surely to follow.
Now Laureano's racing toward the Astros dugout. He's going after somebody, and he's tackled by several Astros. And now we have a real Donnybrook, something that was completely frowned upon in 2020. And both teams are pushing and shoving each other in front of the Astros dugout, and it has not stopped yet.
Yeah, and you're right. It's the first time that's happened. First time it's happened in baseball this year. And obviously the protocols say that you're not supposed to do this.
Also COVID-related, Indians pitcher Zach Plesac was sent home Sunday by the Indians for violating team rules for leaving the hotel Saturday night in Chicago. He apologized to the team. He will quarantine for 72 hours in Cleveland. Also, it was announced that the Pirates series against the Cardinals this week has been postponed because of the coronavirus. The Cardinals have played 5 games this whole year. They haven't played since July 29th. They will go at least 14 days without playing, excluding the split season of 1981. No team since 1900 has ever gone this long between playing games. Also yesterday, the A's won their 9th game in a row. They are really good.
Now Chapman bats. He swings and he blasts one left center field. That's on its way. And the A's have gone back to back. A rocket from Matt Chapman is 4th of the year. And it's 5-0 Oakland.
And the Indians made it 17 straight games to start the season, allowing 4 runs or fewer. That is the second best streak of all time. The A's in 1981 went the first 21 games. Shane Bieber last night ran his strikeout total to 43 in his first 4 appearances. That's best since Pedro Martinez had 44 in 2001.
0-2 the count to Garcia. On the appeal, they ring him up. Yeah, why not for Shane Bieber starting his night with a strikeout. Oof. 2 strikeouts start the evening for Bieber. I know it sounds cliche, but he flips it into another gear, and there's a nasty breaking ball to take care of Grandal. Got him. Dropped the hammer on him with 2 strikes and makes quick work of Garcia for the second time tonight. And now the 1-2 to Abreu. Struck him out. 8 for Shane Bieber tonight.
Another great day for the Padres. They became the 8th team ever to hit 6 homers in the first 3 innings of the game.
High fly ball, deep left field. Don't even move, David Peralta. Don't even move a foot. Cut! Rushed! Gone! Peralta, left fielder, straight ahead. Never moved his eyes, let alone his body. So Tatis didn't get it in the first inning. He got it in the second inning. And a 2-run shot, and the Padres by 5-0.
Fernando Tatis, of course, hit a home run in his 4th straight game. He now has 6 homers in his last 6 games. We'll talk to Jeff Passan about him. Jeff has a piece on him going up on ESPN.com today. And finally, Madison Bumgarner allowed 4 home runs in a game for the first time in his career. He left after 2 innings with back spasms. His ERA is close to 10. Before we get to Jeff and Sarah, Fantasy Focused Football is back weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Matthew Berry, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, and Mike Clay are here to help you dominate your fantasy league. Watch the show on YouTube, Twitter, or the ESPN app, and listen wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to draft your team, compete with your friends, and take home the crown by signing up now at ESPN.com/fantasyfootball today.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
And now we're joined by Jeff Passan, baseball insider at ESPN. Jeff, a bad day in baseball yesterday, a brawl, more COVID. So we're going to start with something good, please. Buster is on a lake on vacation. He's fishing today, I'm sure. So, have you ever caught a fish?
I have caught a fish, but I'm the worst kind of fisherman, Tim, because I'm the fisherman who, how do I put this? I don't like touching fish. They feel so squishy, and when they're in my hands, it creeps me out. So I have to wear gloves if I want to hold a live fish. It's embarrassing.
All right. Have you ever milked a cow?
No, I've not ever milked a cow. I feel like Buster's milked enough cows for all of us.
Of course. He grew up on a farm. All right. Have you ever ridden a horse?
I have ridden a horse. I feel like my, it's not horsemanship, is it? What's the word when you're riding a horse?
In my case, the word is petrified. The one time I rode a horse, what a disaster that was. Okay, 2 more. Have you ever, I don't mean anything by this, have you ever shot a gun?
I have shot a gun. I'm actually a pretty decent shot, shockingly.
Wow, you're a little more well-rounded than the average sports writer, Jeff. Way to go. And last thing, have you ever successfully changed a tire?
Yeah, great story here, actually. Early in the pandemic, my good friend Andy McCullough, who works at The Athletic now, is driving cross country, and Andy comes with this cat, and I'm allergic to cats, so we have to keep the cat down in the garage. And Andy opens up the cage that we have the cat in. This cat is petrified because he has never been out of the house before. Andy opens up the cage, and we just let the cat roam around in my garage, and we cannot find the cat in the morning. We have no idea where the cat has gone. We're looking for doors. We're looking for holes in my garage. Finally, Andy calls up his sister. He's like, I think we lost the cat. And she said, check inside the car. And she didn't mean inside the actual car itself. She meant inside the engine of the car. So we pop the hood of my car, and lo and behold, the cat has climbed up through the tire well into the engine of the car, and we cannot reach the cat because the tire is barring us from getting to it. So we had to change the tire of my car, a tire that was not flat, by the way, inside of my garage, so we could reach up into the engine and grab Andy McCullough's scared cat.
Unbelievable. Most people save a cat from the top of a tree. You saved it from the...
I mean, we tried to honk the horn to scare it out of the engine. Nope. Cat doesn't scare.
All right. Well, thank you for our life questions for the day. Now on to the not so great stuff. There was a brawl yesterday in Oakland. Jeff, what are we doing here?
The whole thing was just so preventable. And the frustrating part is that the adult in the room, Alex Cintrone, the hitting coach for the Houston Astros, I think very easily could have prevented this. Look, Ramon Laureano was angry, but I think Ramon Laureano also understands that the ball he was hit with was a breaking ball. And it was the third time he'd been hit in the series. And so the frustration there is palpable, but this one clearly did not have a lot of intent. And Ramon Laureano showed, you know, he got a little bit of his saltiness out by essentially pantomiming to Castellanos, the rookie pitcher, you got to finish your slider. You got to throw it all the way through. But when Alex Cintrone started chirping from the bench, that just exacerbated a situation that you know, took the tinder and just lit it on fire. And what ended up happening, the fallout there was ugly. And there is going to be a very long suspension for Alex Cintrone. Considering that we saw Joe Kelly get suspended 8 games in a 60-game season, even though he didn't hit a guy with a pitch, Cintrone, I think, is going to be out for a while with the Astros.
So, Jeff, what does that mean? What does out for a while mean? It's more than 8 games. Is he going to get
20? Yeah.
What's he going to get?
Yeah, I think we're probably looking at a minimum of 15, Tim. It wouldn't at all surprise me if it were more, though, because what ended up happening, what the fallout from this was, were 70 people gathering in a huge pile, were Dustin Garneau tackling Ramon Laureano, who I think is probably going to get a pretty significant suspension himself for charging the bench. Because if he doesn't charge there, of course, this whole thing doesn't happen. But the optics of it from Cintrone's side are just, you know, there's nothing you can say. He is a coach. He stepped to Laureano, and he did the come on motion to it. And so because of that, I think it's 15 minimum. Wouldn't surprise me 20, 25. And would you be entirely shocked, Tim, to see the league just come down and say you're done for the year, period?
No, I wouldn't be surprised. And again, this is why they threw the book at Joe Kelly.
Yes.
Want this to happen again, and then it happened again. This is the one thing we can't have during a pandemic, our two teams fighting with each other. I'm against it anyway, but during a pandemic, it's completely ridiculous. And so what's Laureano going to get? Yes, maybe he was goaded into this, but he did charge the opposite dugout. He's a good player on a red-hot team. What happens to him suspension-wise?
I mean, does he get the Kelly 8? Does he get a little bit more because, you know, he actually was trying to incite violence here? I don't know if he gets a whole lot more than 10. I think that's probably the territory. And right now, listen, Chris Young, who's in charge of these decisions now, these are not easy cases that he has to figure out and adjudicate and really get to the heart of, because you gotta be tough guy. And I don't know, maybe Joe Kelly was meant to be an example, didn't work, but almost like the second time through, it's like the Marlins should have been an example. They weren't, and the Cardinals did what they did. They should be the clear example, but then Zach Plesac goes and does what he does, and who knows what other players are going and doing what they are at this point.
All right, so what did you think of the Indians' decision to send Plesac back to Cleveland to quarantine for 72 hours?
I thought that was the least that they could have done. I think that they very easily could have said, you know what, if you're going to make a decision like this that is selfish and can put in danger this clubhouse and the rest of your teammates, we don't want you around this year. And I wonder in a situation with a lesser player, whether that would have been the decision. We certainly can't deny that the quality of a player tends to factor into situations like this. And Zach Plesac has been really good. But either way, Tim, it's just one of those things that for the Indians particularly, they have been so unbelievably good when it comes to protocols. And Chris Antonetti has gotten raves from around the league, other executives and other teams about just how stringent the Indians are being. And then to see a player go and potentially endanger that all is the most frustrating thing you can possibly have if you're in his or the Indians' position, especially when they have a good chance at the postseason this year. And when with a rotation like they have the ability to go and win the World Series.
Yeah. And just to finish that point, I asked Tito Francona right before the season started, what should we expect to see with COVID? And he says, if our guys start to get sick, then we know the whole game is in big trouble, because he said nobody has done this in a stricter way than the Indians. So I was not surprised at all that they sent him home. They should have sent him home. And that should be a message to all the players. If we're going to get the season in, we're going to have to be serious about it, as the Indians were yesterday. Now, Jeff, on to the Cardinals. The Cardinals have played 5 games.
Oh, man. They
haven't played since July 29th. We've had 40 games postponed this year, 35 by COVID. What are we going to do with the Cardinals?
I don't know, Tim. I have been asking that same question to people around baseball. And at one point it was, they'll make up the games. There's not enough time on the calendar to make up the games anymore. I mean, you're looking inside of their division right now. Cincinnati Reds and Pittsburgh Pirates have both played 16 games. You look around in other divisions, teams have played 17 games. They've played 5 games. And oh, by the way, they're not going to be playing their 3 games at least this week, starting today and Tuesday and Wednesday as well, that were scheduled against the Pirates. And after that, are they going to go to Detroit? Is that really like in the offing here? And if they don't, then they will have missed a quarter of the season at that point. And you ask if you're any of the other teams. I got a text from a player last night inside of that division saying, are they really going to let the Cardinals play 15 fewer games than us and go on winning percentage? And he was meaning to say, like, yeah, there's an advantage potentially when you play fewer games. Of course, there's also a disadvantage when you're off for 2 weeks in the middle of a season. So there's just no good solution for the Cardinals at this point. If you say to them, sorry, you haven't played enough games, you're not going to qualify for the postseason, there could be a rash of opt-outs, or you could have players who look at the protocols and say, you know what, if we're not playing for anything, if we're not playing for a ring, are we really going to follow these strictly and abide by these? It's just a complete mess. And if there is not if there is a greater warning sign to the rest of baseball as to how fragile this entire endeavor is and how quickly it can fall apart, I don't know what it is.
All right, on to something good. The A's have won 9 games in a row, Jeff. They are really good. What have you seen from the A's so far?
We've seen clutch hitting. We've seen great pitching. We've seen Timmy a lot of what we saw last year and even the year before, when you know Matt Olson and Matt Chapman on the corners are franchise level guys, and someone like Laureano in center field. I mean, Ramon Laureano was acquired for Brandon Bailey, who's now a relief pitcher with Houston. He was a guy who had a great minor league season, then moved up a level and sort of looked like he had stalled. A's still loved him, and he's been absolutely spectacular. But, you know, I look at their pitching, Tim, and man, is their pitching good. Frankie Montas might be the most underrated pitcher in baseball. I mean, if you look at him over the last couple of years, the numbers he's putting up, I think he might actually have the best ERA for any pitcher who's thrown like 100 plus innings over the last couple of years. And Jesus Luzardo is something. I mean, he's going to be a front of the rotation type starter for years to come. And, you know, what the A's do so well is cobble together a bullpen. And it's not just, you know, going out and signing Jake Diekman or bringing Joaquin Soria in. It's a guy like Birch Smith, who has been anywhere and everywhere and has sort of just been like a, you know, just an average type guy, and he's thrown 10 scoreless innings this year. It's a guy like Jordan Weems, you know, converted pitcher who found really good stuff this spring, and they've gotten, you know, five solid innings out of him. Oakland is just, you know, I don't know any other way to put it. Oakland just plays a really enjoyable brand of baseball. I like watching the A's. They're a fun team. They're a young team, and they are a really good team.
Speaking of great pitching, Shane Bieber, great again last night. That's 43 yep. strikeouts in his first four appearances. Indians, 17 straight games to start this year, allowing fewer than five runs. That's four short of the major league record set by the 81 A's. I mean, Bieber's walk strikeout ratio is a joke. When you watch the Indians, you already said it during this podcast, if they keep that starting pitching healthy, they do an awful lot of good stuff in October.
Yeah. You know what I love about Shane Bieber, Tim? Shane Bieber actually throws six distinct pitches now. And, you know, when he came up to the big leagues, there were some questions about him because of his velocity. You know, that's why he fell to the fourth round in the draft. But he's got his four-seam fastball that he can command probably as well as any pitcher in baseball. That's why he was successful coming up. He's got the slider that he throws, and it's a lot like a Corey Kluber slider. It's one of those just heavy late breakers. He's got his changeup that has always been that pitch that he can use to get left-handers out. It's his curveballs, I say plural there, and his cutter, though, that are so incredible. He throws two different curveballs. And Ben Clemens at Fangraphs did a really good story last week about this. If you look at what Bieber did last year in the middle of the season, he changed the shape of his curveball more to mimic his slider. So the balls would be coming the same, you know, in the same slot, the same sort of area coming out of his hand. And one of them would break significantly and one of them would break a little less. And if you're a hitter, it's like, how do you deal with that? Well, he brought back his other curve this year too. So Shane Bieber actually throws two really good curveballs. And then because he's not gross enough, he added a cutter to that. And the whole, everything when you have command will work. But man, when you're a hitter going up there, it's hard enough against a reliever who's got a really good fastball and slider to figure out what's coming. When you have to try and choose among six pitches, you can't guess. You just simply can't. You have to look and try and figure it out in the moment. And that is why Shane Bieber has struck out 43 batters in four games.
Right. And then on the other side, there's Fernando Tatis Jr., your boy. By the way, your TV piece on him was tremendous. And your story is coming out today on ESPN.com. Tatis has played 100 major league games. He's got 30 homers. He's got six homers in the last six games. He's had a homer four games in a row. He's a leadoff hitter. He's a shortstop, and he's huge. I mean, he's beyond amazing.
I hate making this comparison because he is 21 years old and because he's 100 games into his big league career. But the size, the speed, the power, the ability is very Alex Rodriguez-like. And Alex Rodriguez is one of the best players ever in baseball. Like, just one of the most talented. We know that. We've seen that. And so making that comp, I hesitate to do so. But what Tatis is doing right now is breathtaking. He is so much fun to watch. He is so much fun to be around. He's such a dynamic personality. And he wants to be out there representing baseball. Like, that's the thing about him. And you know, the commissioner, Rob Manfred, has indirectly criticized Mike Trout in the past for being, you know, the best player in the world, but he doesn't really want to be out there doing the interviews, doing the advertisements, doing the stuff like that. Fernando Tatis Jr. has been living this because he has his father's name, because he has been around fame for his entire life. And in the Dominican Republic, in San Pedro de Macorís, where he grew up, that is, you know, the cradle of shortstops. And so if anyone was born for this, Tim, it was him. And to see him come out this year and pick up right where he left off last year offensively, and then even more impressive defensively, zero errors through 16 games. The big knock on him last year was that he was too sloppy with his defense. He spent all offseason, probably twice as much time working on his glove as he did his bat. And if you have even an average shortstop, let alone an above average one with a bat like that, we're talking a franchise type player. And good Lord, he's 21 years around for a long time.
Okay, and last thing for you, Jeff. In that Padres game yesterday, Madison Bumgarner gave up 4 home runs in a game for the first time in his career. His velocity is down. His ERA is almost 10, and he came out with back spasms after 2 innings. Again, what is the level of concern with him?
I mean, the level of concern should be reasonably high considering the Diamondbacks, who for years had done a really good job of positioning themselves during this retool of theirs to go out and spend some money, spent $72 million on him this offseason, and we're not even a year into that contract. The Diamondbacks have rebuilt on the fly about as well as anybody in recent years. They have not tanked. They have not lost games. They've just done a great job of putting a farm system together while still maintaining competitiveness. But the fact that they've come out of the gate 6-10 and that their big ticket item, Madison Bumgarner, has struggled as much as he has is very frustrating. I still think that the Diamondbacks are a good team and potentially a playoff team. But I think the Dodgers are the best team in baseball. I think the Padres, I picked them even before, Timmy, the playoffs were expanded. I thought the Padres were going to be a playoff team this year. And the Colorado Rockies are sitting here with the second best record in the National League a quarter of the way through the season. So the Diamondbacks have a tough row to hoe here. And we're going to see how much metal they and Mad Bum have.
All right, Jeff, thanks for joining us today. When Buster comes back from his vacation, we're going to have a cow milking tutorial for him. He's going to show you how to milk a cow, and he's going to show, I've done it once. That was a disaster also. So he's going to show us how to milk a cow when he gets back. Are you in?
Oh, I'm 100% in. And not only that, can we go to a ranch and ride horses together?
Jeff, I'm telling you, the time I rode the horse was to impress my wife, who was my girlfriend, to show her how adventuresome I was. We were running across the field, I swear to God, at 40 miles an hour. Going 4 miles an hour, but I had no idea how to ride a horse. It was the most frightening thing I had ever done to that point. So, yes, we'll milk a cow, we'll ride a horse. How about that?
I am so in, Tim. I can't wait.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Numbers Game.
And now we're joined by Sarah Langs, reporter and producer for MLB.com. She's also a great researcher for ESPN. Sarah's one of my favorite people in the world. She loves the game. She loves the numbers. And she's the only one in the baseball department at ESPN who is smaller than me, which is really saying something. How are you, Sarah?
I'm doing great, Timmy. Thank you for that intro. I love it. And you're the best to work with. And I appreciate that.
Thanks. And we're doing the game tonight, Sarah and I, with Eduardo Perez and Carl Ravitch. We're doing the Giants at the Astros. So Sarah will be supplying numbers before, during, and after the game. She's great at it. Okay. So Sarah, the numbers game, what do you have for us today?
So the first number I have, or the third number I have, excuse me, we count down. I always
number
forget.
Three.
There we go. Thank you, Taylor. Sometimes we have sound effects, sometimes we don't. It's okay. Is 21. So we have to talk about 21-year-old Fernando Tatis Jr. He's homered in four straight games, which is tied for the second longest home run streak in the modern era for any player his age or younger. The only streak longer in that list is Ronald Acuna Jr., who homered in five straight in 2018 as a 20-year-old. And Tatis is also tied for the major league lead in home runs with Aaron Judge, which is absolutely incredible. And yes, it's only eight home runs right now. But if he were to lead the majors in home runs, he would be just the third player to lead the majors in home runs in his age 21 season or younger. And the others are Eddie Matthews in 1953, and Sam Crawford in 1901. So that's what Tatis is looking at right now in terms of history.
Number two.
Number two is 38-360. So I thought this was some fun history that you would appreciate, Timmy. So last night, after the rain delay on the south side of Chicago, we saw Oliver Perez come in and get the save for the Indians. So at 38 years and 360 days old, he's the third oldest player to record a save for the Indians since the stat became official in 1969. The only ones older were Doug Jones in an August game in 1998 at 41 years and 68 days old, and Steve Carlton in April 1987 as a 42-year-old. And both of those were like pitch the final three innings of a game saves. So they weren't what Oliver Perez was dealing with, which was runners on base in a one-run game. It had just been pouring in Chicago, and the team had allowed four runs for the 17th straight game. They haven't allowed more than four runs yet this year.
Number one.
Number one is two. So on Saturday, we saw Austin Slater record his first ever multi-homer game, and he did it by hitting two home runs off of Clayton Kershaw. He's just the seventh player with multiple home runs in a game against Kershaw, joining Bo Bichette last year, Jose Reyes in 2017, Jay Bruce and Jason Worth in 2013, Carlos Gonzalez in 2012, and Adam Dunn in 2010. And the three home runs that Kershaw allowed in total, including one to Mike Yastrzemski, were the most he'd ever allowed in a game against the Giants, which is pretty incredible because we were supposed to have him on opening day. We were all prepared for how great he is, not just on opening day, but against the Giants. All of these against a single opponent records. And there he was, allowing two home runs to Austin Slater.
Well, Sarah, those are great numbers. Back to Tatis for a minute. The key is that he is a shortstop. I mean, Sam Crawford, Eddie Matthews, they were not shortstops. He's playing a premium defensive position with every part of the game covered, and he's hitting all these home runs. How much more impressive is it that he's playing that position with this kind of power?
Absolutely. I mean, you nailed it on the head. So yesterday was actually his 100th career game. And that home run he hit was his 30th career home run, which is the most by a shortstop through 100 career games. And we know all of the Hall of Fame shortstops. You can pick and choose. You can pick Cal Ripken Jr. You can pick Alex Rodriguez's, you know, resume, even though he isn't in the Hall of Fame. You can pick and choose all of those different shortstops. None of them did what he's doing right now. And we didn't even talk about his speed. I mean, everything that he is doing at this age, at that position, is just so impressive.
Right. As for Oliver Perez, Sarah, I watched him in the bullpen last night. He's got almost as much gray hair as I do, which is really saying something. But the difference is he's still pitching in the big leagues. You know, maybe 12 years ago, he was on his way out. He couldn't throw a strike, had all sorts of trouble. God bless him for sticking around this long. How impressive is it that this guy can still throw and get people out in the big leagues at his age?
It's really incredible. And I think that it was interesting because he was a guy who I think we thought might end up being affected by the three batter minimum rule, but he's still been really valuable to that team because the way he was used, I think he had the most one batter appearances last year, or he was close to it. And that was sort of how Terry Francona used him over the last 2 years. But this year he talked in spring training about how he was up to the challenge. He'll figure out a different way to pitch. He'll be helpful to the team. And he's done that. But it's just, you know, everyone kind of on Twitter last night was just like, wow, Ollie Perez is in to save this game. And everyone says the same thing, that we thought he was done a while back. I mean, I grew up a Mets fan. I remember watching him pitch in the 2006 playoffs, and here he is. I mean, it's really incredible.
All right, and just to finish, Austin Slater, two homers off Clayton Kershaw. Sarah, this is why we love this game. You know, we don't have people, you know, dunking on Michael Jordan or taking the ball away from Steve Nash, but it happens in baseball all the time. Young guy hits two homers off a future Hall of Famer, obviously. Doesn't that speak to how great the game is, these incredible lists that you come up with, how eclectic the names are on these lists?
Yeah, I mean, that's what stands out to me most, is that list of hitters are good hitters, but none of them are going to go. Bo Bichette could end up in the Hall of Fame. Hey, Austin Slater's career is just starting. Who knows? But those aren't necessarily the big deal guys who we see even over the last 10 years, the ones who are hitting two home runs off of Clayton Kershaw. And it's so cool to remember, you know, Adam Dunn was an absolutely outstanding power hitter, but to realize, okay, his career overlapped with Kershaw and he was able to get him when Kershaw was still very young back in 2010. And Jose Reyes in 2017, I mean, tail end of his career, not exactly a power hitter in any way. And to see these names on there is just so much fun. It's, of course, it's why we love the game.
Right. Well, thanks for joining us, Sarah. Can't wait to work with you tonight again. Giants at the Astros at 9 o'clock. Sarah will be in Connecticut. Ravi will be in Connecticut. I'll be in Maryland. Eduardo will be in Miami. And we'll do a game from Texas. It is a challenge of all challenges, but it's great fun. I'll see you tonight, okay?
I'll talk to you tonight, Timmy. Thank you so much for having me.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Tim Kirkshin, Bleacher Tweets for Monday. And I want to mention before we get in there, this is a University of Maryland helmed podcast here. I want to drop that on you. A couple alumni rolling on the podcast today.
Well, the difference is, Taylor, I graduated 30,000 years before you did. I'm certain.
Do you have any good, any fond memories of college that pop to come to mind?
Well, I was a rather unusual kid in college. I wasn't doing what every other college student was doing. But I will say I love the basketball team at Maryland, and I saw some of the greatest stuff ever. Brad Davis's freshman year was my freshman year at Maryland. We were supposed to finish last in the ACC. We won the regular season because Brad Davis, point guard, was unbelievable. And Moses Malone was in one of my classes my freshman year at Maryland, but he never showed up because he signed with whatever, the Utah Stars. But I was actually in a class where they did the role, and Moses Malone's name was called out for the role, and I almost started crying, thinking if he'd come here, we would have won three national championships. Instead, he went to the ABA. So those are my favorite memories at the University of Maryland, both of them basketball related.
Wow, very cool. Moses Malone, who knew? A great what if here on the podcast. Let's dig into these tweets here. Our pal Aaron at Aaron San Diego writes in, excited you'll be on the pod Monday, Tim. From one box score lover to another, can you please share with us the process of how you go about reading box scores? Where do you begin? Where do you go from there, etc.?
Well, there's no necessary order, but I read every line of every box score every day, just in case you might see something that you've never seen before. You know, that Manny Parra had a line several years ago, pitcher in relief, all threes, 3-3-3-3-3-3-3. So we checked Sonny Siebert in the 70s was the last year that anybody had a pitching line quite like that. And that's what I'm always looking for, is unusual things that jump off the page to me, a guy who's been reading these box scores for literally 60 years. Other people can go into a house and the chandelier jumps right at them, like they can see that stuff. I can't see any of that stuff, but I can see stuff in box scores, and that's what I'm looking for, is unusual things. And every day I check to see if anyone has a reverse triple double, is what I call it. That's two strikeouts, two errors, and two grounded into double plays. Kurt Bavacqua in 1978 is the only player, since all those categories became official, to have two of those all in the same game. So anytime I see somebody grounded into two double plays, I'm hoping, did he strike out twice and did he make two errors? Then we'd have the second look at this. That's the kind of stuff I'm looking for every day. And I must say, it is a pathetic way to go through life.
Wow, keep the dream alive there, Tim. It'll happen one day. Let's go to our last question for today. Tim Valenzuela at Tim Valenzuela writes in the wake of the Pirates Twins game being delayed by a drone flying in the stadium, what's the strangest reason a game that was played got delayed that you've seen?
Well, of course, we've all seen bees and rodents on the field and unbelievable rain. But just to try to be different and tell a story I'm not sure everyone knows about, I did a game at Exhibition Stadium. I want to say it was 1984. And the wind was so unbelievably hard that they started the game, but Doug Rader, the manager of the Rangers, did not let Charlie Huff, the knuckleball pitcher, who was supposed to start, he wouldn't let him start because the wind was going to take the knuckleball to places we couldn't even see. So he started Jim Bibby instead. Jim Bibby, he said, well, we're starting him because he's the largest man in North America. So if we know one guy is not going to get blown off the mound, it's Jim Bibby. So that game lasted about two innings. I swear to you, Taylor, there was a pop-up to the shortstop that blew into foul territory over the first base dugout. That's how hard the wind was blowing. And after like three innings, the umpire said, all right, this is absurd. You can't play a major league game in that. Never seen a game called just because of wind, but I covered that game in 1984.
All right. Really appreciate the questions, everyone. Don't forget to write in. We got Tim with us on Wednesday and Friday, and then we got the show, Dave Schoenfield, on with us tomorrow, Tuesday, and again on Thursday. Please subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and go Terps.
Thanks, everyone, for today. My special thanks to Jeff, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV.
Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.